Okay, good morning, everybody. We'll get started with the part one last time. You didn't have to hear part one, but if you were here for part one, so then remember we talked about genetics mostly. We talked about the halachic implications of a couple getting married, the pre-marital screening that could and should take place to prevent Rachmana Litzlan, Tay-Sachs, and all sorts of other genetic diseases. And we talked a little bit about the implications of that in terms of how and different ways that one can screen. So we talked a little bit about as well, and that's what we'll start off with today, the concept of egg freezing. We talked about the vitality of a man, that a man can continue to be fertile even to late years in life. It's not unheard of even today, certainly in the times of Chazal, that people would father a child even if they were elder statesmen. And you see this in secular society when people who are 70, 80 years old get married to a 20-year-old girl and they have a child. So that's physiologically capable and potential for that to occur. Not necessarily desirable. Halacha actually discourages these, what we call June-December weddings. Halacha will tell a woman who is undergoing Yibam that this is not a best situation if it's a totally disparate age. And the Gemara tells us that the Beis Din would go and tell the person, do chalitza rather than do Yibam in the days when they would do Yibam. So we don't necessarily encourage something like that, but here we're talking about physiologically, you're capable of having a child in that situation. Other way around, however, there's a big difference. A woman loses, as we discussed at the end of last year, a woman loses her capability to go and have children as she gets older in life. She's most fertile from the teenage years until the age of 30, roughly no difference in her capabilities of having a child during that period of time. You're not, quote, more fertile at 25 than you are at 28 than at 30, but around the age of 30, somewhere between the age of 30 and 32, the science tells us that there's a decrease in a woman's capability of having a child. But Baruch Hashem, most women in their 30s are still able to have a child. And women in their early 40s can still sometimes have children. The longer you go, the less likely it is that that's going to happen. And unfortunately also, the more likely it is that you'll have a child that's born with some sort of a potential problem, Rachmana Litzlan. So therefore, the concept of egg freezing in halacha has come about. With the technology that's available today, and the science that we have to demonstrate it, we can essentially show that a woman's fertility is dependent upon the age of her egg and not dependent upon her body age. So if a woman is 45 years old, but she has an egg that's 30 years old, she's just as likely to be successful in terms of in vitro fertilization or having a normal healthy baby if you use that egg in a surrogate mother. So then in that situation, the woman will actually look like she's 30 years old, not like she's 45 years old. And we mentioned at the end of the last year that this has tremendous ramifications for shidduchim. If a young lady is trying to find her shidduch, she hasn't been successful in doing so. So a man has a mitzvah pruvu, a man has an obligation to go and have a child, and he's going to want to try to have a wife that can give him a child. So if he's 40 years old, he doesn't want a 40-year-old wife because the likelihood of her having a child is far diminished than if he has a 30-year-old wife. So he would prefer, from a halachic point of view, forget personal points of view, he wants to be mekayem the mitzvah approval, he'd rather have a 30-year-old wife who is highly likely to be able to provide him with a child rather than a 40-year-old wife who may or may not still be capable of having a child, but statistically is far less likely. So therefore, the Eitzah has come out in the secular world. We talked about the secular world. They do it for non-halachic purposes. They want women to be in the workforce. They want the women to excel in their career. And the major companies are willing to pay the cost of egg freezing so that the woman will work till she's 40, and then she'll have her child when she's 40, 45. And she'll have a one child, her 1.2 child, whatever it is that they want in the secular world. And companies like Apple and other major companies are more than willing to pay their young women to delay having a child. But the fertility, the likelihood is less. No, you'll have a 30-year-old egg, you'll be fine. You'll do in vitro fertilization, you'll be fine. And this way you can have your career. So that's not what we're talking about in halacha. The halachic question is such a thing permissible for the right reasons? A woman's trying to get married, and unfortunately, she hasn't yet found the shidduch. A man's trying to get married, unfortunately hasn't yet found a shidduch. Now, they go and are read a shidduch. So the man wants to have children. If he's read the 40-year-old and read a 30-year-old, he's going to probably take the 30-year-old because he wants even kind of mitzvah peruvu. Forget the emotional reasons that a person would like to have his own child, but just purely from a halachic point of view. So in this situation, halacha would say, and there's no posik that I'm aware of that says otherwise, that is halachically permissible for the woman when she reaches that parasha of her life, she's 30, 32, so that's what medically somewhere in that area, a woman should consider going to her obstetrician and saying, I'd like to have my eggs frozen. Mitzvah Hashem, she finds a shidduch the next day, she gets married 3 months later, she'll never need those eggs that are frozen. She can get pregnant naturally and have a just likely, a higher likelihood than getting pregnant through in vitro fertilization. But let's say she doesn't find the shidduch right away. She's 30, doesn't find 31, 32, 36. And now she finds the shidduch at 36, mazel tov. She gets married, they try to have a child, they're unable to have a child for whatever the reason. She's less fertile, it just doesn't go. And now instead of implanting and doing in vitro fertilization at that point in time with a 36-year-old egg or a 38-year-old egg or a 42-year-old egg, the chances of having in vitro fertilization be successful with such an egg is much less. So therefore, in that situation, if she, quote, pulls out of her pocket a 30-year-old egg, they have the eggs frozen, so then there's a very, very high success rate, equivalent to if she'd been 30 years old and had the procedure done, even though she's now 45, and she'll carry the baby when she's 45. The carrying the baby is not so much of a problem. It's getting pregnant. The eggs decrease in their vitality over time. So in this halachically acceptable way, all the posts can say this is a perfectly legitimate and allowable, and I would dare say there are poskim that strongly recommend this. And I can tell you, I know of cases where people have come and they say, I'm a 40-year-old guy, I'm a 45-year-old guy, I still want to have children, but I don't want to marry a 24-year-old girl. It's, you know, it's just, you know, she's not my generation. She's not proper for me. I'd like a more mature woman. I actually would like to marry a 45-year-old woman if he's a 45-year-old man. I'd like to have somebody that I'll grow old with and be more compatible with, but I want to have children. So I know specific cases where such a person, they look through databases and they find women who have frozen eggs and they can make a shidduch in that situation. And it's a wonderful opportunity for both the older woman and the older man to make a shidduch. This is 100% halachically acceptable. There's absolutely no posik that I'm aware of that suggests that it's not. Institutes like PUA and Time and other organizations like that strongly advocate and recommend that women at a certain age, if they're not yet married, still want to have children. So this is a very halachically acceptable thing. It should be done bitzina. It should be done not as a public gathering. Although in certain circles, when women reach a certain birthday, this is like a birthday present that they give themselves in certain circles, that they know that I have to go and do this to increase my chances of Be'ezus Hashem getting a shidduch and having be able to have children, both for her own personal needs, as we spoke at last time. There's one opinion that says women are mechuyavos in pruvu, but the halachically accepted opinion is that women are actually not mechuyavos in pruvu. They're only the man that's mechuyav. The woman, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gave such a strong maternal desire to have children, makes up for any lack of, quote, mitzvah involved, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to give a mitzvah to a woman, which is somewhat risky. There is a slight danger in childbirth, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that the women want to have children more than he made it a mitzvah that they have to have children. Okay, that's pretty straightforward and easy. The halachically much, much, much more difficult question is, what happens if a woman is still single and she's 40 years old and she says, I'd like to have a child, but I don't have a husband. But I don't really need a husband. You can have a child without having a husband. Now, not Rachmana Litzlan doing something that's aser, not having relations with a man, Rachmana Litzlan, outside of marriage, but she says, I have eggs frozen. I'll go to a donor bank for sperm. There, I mentioned last time, there are many tshuvas written by Rav Moshe Feinstein. That's, I think, the 8 tshuvas written in the Igros Moshe relating to donor sperm. And we paskin that that's halachically allowed. Rav Moshe had preferred it be done from a non-Jewish donor for various reasons. I mentioned last time that caused a lot of sichsuch. But the bottom line is, you can get donor sperm in a halachically acceptable way, implant them in this single woman, involving no direct aveira, and then implant the infertilized egg, now an embryo, back inside that woman, and she can carry that baby to term. And she's a single Jewish mother who has not done anything halachically wrong from a point of view of arayas, from the point of view of sexual morality, is this something that halacha condones? So I'm not aware of a single posek that would publicly say yes, that you should do something like this, l'chatchila. And there are numerous reasons why this is not. Number one, this would destroy to a certain extent the Jewish family. The Jewish family should be made of a husband and a wife. And a child should be raised by a husband, by a father, and a mother, not by a single parent. Never, Rachmana Litzlan, sometimes death, Rachmana Litzlan, lo aleinu, occurs. Sometimes divorce occurs. Sometimes there are other reasons. A spouse just leaves, mental illness, whatever. And Nebuch, we have to raise a child with a single parent. It's not ideal. When you have no choice, it's a bidyevet, so then of course we do it. Rahman al-San, some children are totally orphans. Of course we take care of them. But is that ideal? Is that a lechatchila that one should do that lechatchila? And the answer is clearly not. And no posek that I'm aware of has come out to say that when a woman asks such a shaila like this, we can publicly declare, absolutely, heter gomer, go and do it. You can't find a husband, at least you can find a child. And that's not something that is halachically sanctioned. There may be extenuating circumstances in an individual case. I mentioned last time, Rahman al-Islam, if a husband and wife were married, and Nebuch, the husband died, there's a famous story of a chayal, Rahman al-Islam, Hashem Yimkom Damo in Eretz Yisrael, they were a married couple, and the chayal died, and they had opportunity to take his sperm out right after his death and fertilize his wife's egg. And they did it, and that was halachically sanctioned. But that's an extreme situation. That is not something that is the routine that one would do. And again, the poskim certainly are strongly against a single woman intentionally, lechatchila, going and having a child on her own without the sanctity of marriage, without having a husband to help her raise the child. But egg freezing is not something that we should dispense with and dismiss with. It certainly is also a very viable alternative for people, Rahman al-Islam, to get chemotherapy. And sometimes that would destroy the sperm or the eggs. And you can save both the men and the women who are undergoing Nebuch, a very strong poison, a chemotherapy. And they, in fact, are going to require egg freezing or sperm freezing in order for them to have children, Be'ezus Hashem, if they're cured from the cancer, they get married. I know cases in the shul here, I know of cases elsewhere where this has, Baruch Hashem, successfully occurred, and you can have children even after you're technically no longer fertile because of chemotherapy or because of some other machala that the person had. Now, I handed out an article that I just wrote that was just published in the Orthodox Nurses Journal in the December 2019, so it's hot off the press. Next issue in halacha is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. This deals a lot with the issues that we discussed last time, which, if a family does in fact have a genetic problem and they're already emotionally attached to each other. The beauty, we said, of some of the genetic testing is don't let them get emotionally attached. Check their genetic compatibility on date one, date two. And if they're unfortunately not genetically compatible, so okay, we won't have day three, day four. So I feel a little bit bad, but you're not emotionally attached. Very difficult to tell a couple that's engaged, they've gone out for a year, they know each other very well, and say, no, you're not genetically compatible, and you should break up. That's very difficult emotionally. That's why we try not to put ourselves in such situations. But when it does happen, what are you supposed to do? Or a couple that got married and they did get tested, but now there are additional tests that come out. Rahman al-Islam, they have a child that's born with a genetic abnormality, which wasn't tested for. And now they know there's a 1 in 4 chance that any future children that they're going to have are going to have that medical problem. So then this PGD is a wonderful, halachically acceptable Rav Yashiv Zatzal Paskin for Eretz Yisrael and for the world. He was a major posek that came out discussing this issue and said halachically is acceptable with certain caveats. You can't just do this willy-nilly. You can't do this to say, well, I'd like to have a son that has blue eyes. Two things there, a son and blue eyes. So you're not allowed to do that. Halacha doesn't sanction you to go and have to practice birth control, have to do all sorts of other things, have to do in vitro fertilization, have to do testing in order that you should have a son that has blue eyes. You let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take care of that. That's the psak of Rav Yashiv, that's the psak of all the Gedolim. But what happens when Nebuch, there's a 1 in 4 chance that they'll have a genetic abnormality of some consequence. So in this situation, halacha, all the poskim allow you to do PGD. In other words, they have to practice birth control. It's halachically sanctioned in this situation. They can't get pregnant naturally because of the 1 in 4 chance, Nebuch, that the child would have this horrible genetic disease. So you shouldn't put yourself in this situation. But again, we're talking after the fact, bidyevet, if the situation comes up. So then in this situation, what you can do is PGD, which is that you take the egg and you take the sperm, you fertilize them, and then you check what is the, in the test tube, what is the genetic makeup of this fertilized egg in the test tube. And if it's the one in four that's unfortunately going to have the genetic disease, you throw it out. If you check it and it's not a child with genetic disease, then that becomes a viable egg to reimplant inside the mother. And this is halachically sanctioned, and this is in fact being done, Baruch Hashem, by the hundreds, if not by the thousands, every year in Klal Yisrael, to allow children to be born that don't have these horrific genetic problems. But that opens up a can of worms. Because, okay, I want a son, I want a daughter. So what does halacha say about gender selection? You can now design your child. Can't do it perfectly, can't have everybody just looking perfectly good like me. So you have to take your chances a little bit. But you can say, I want a gene, we know certain genes, I want this gene that will have this character trait, this character trait, this physical property. So as we learn more and more and more about genetics, so then we can start selecting more and more, well, you know, this is the genetic makeup that I like for my child, literally designer babies. It's just about medically possible to do that for some things nowadays. You still can't pick everything, but as we learn more and more, you can. So what does halacha have to say about that? So this is a very, very important issue. So halacha does not allow you to go say, well, listen, I want to have two children. I want to have one boy and one girl. I want to have two boys. I want to have two girls. Halacha doesn't allow you to do that. You take your chances. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides what the gender of your child will be, and that's what it is. What happens if a couple has five boys in a row, five girls in a row? And naturally, they might want to have a child of the other gender. There's a famous song from Journeys, right? Me and my five girls. My five girls and I, right? The guy has five girls, so Mistama, he wants a boy for the next child. Guy has five boys, Mistama, he and his wife want a girl for the next child. Not necessarily. Many, many people will say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, really Spiegel, Shlita from the neighborhood, had 10 girls, 10 in a row girls, then he had twin boys. K'nayinahara, Hashem solved his issues and problems for him. His Yotze Kol Adeos, Puravu. With 12 children, there's a sheet that it said, with only 10, he might not have been Yotze Puravu. You need at least one boy and one girl. Some say two boys and two girls. HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted him his wish. So he was Makai in the midst of Puravu in the fullest extent. Are you Mechuyiv to do that? Are you Mechuyiv to say, wait, I'll let HaKadosh Baruch Hu do it? So certainly there's absolutely nothing wrong. I don't want to suggest that you must do PGD. There's certainly nothing wrong with saying, I have 10 girls, I have 10 boys. Head to Gomer. Don't, you're not Mechuyiv to try to bypass God to be Makai in the midst of Puravu when natural, normal, procreational routes are available to you. No posek says that in that situation where a guy has 10 girls, he must do PGD to have a boy. There's no posek that would suggest that. I would say that that's technically wrong to suggest something like that, because you're doing chavali, you're doing all sorts of things. It's not your business to delve into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decisions as to how many children you should have. But, and here you have great poskim, I have some of them listed in the article that I handed out, you have great poskim that say that after a certain number of consecutive children, and you don't have one of the other gender, so if a person has five boys or five girls, some suggest six boys, six girls in a row, and you don't have any children of the other gender, then PGD would be halachically allowed and permitted, and that's what they do, in fact, in Eretz Yisrael, and the hospitals that are under halachic auspices, they will allow PGD to be done in that situation to have gender selection if you've had five or six in a row. That's the number that they use, either five or six in a row. If you have three girls, you don't can't do PGD in Eretz Yisrael under halachically sanctioned auspices, and so you have a boy as your fourth child, or vice versa. You have three boys, you now want to have a girl. So in America, you do whatever you want. You go to a gynecologist, they'll do pretty much whatever you want. The person says, I'd like to have gender selection. I want to have one boy, I want to have one girl, I just want to have one child, and I want it to be a boy, I want it to be a girl. So in America, you can do that, but not halachically sanctioned. Because again, if you want to do this, then you have to make sure that you're not going to have a child naturally, which involves many yisurim to use birth control if there's no halachically acceptable reason to do so. So this is a major usage, if you wish, of PGD. Genetics, for preventing abnormal babies from being born, and for certain types of situations for gender selection. But what about for other situations? So let me tell you a story. This is a true story. By Dr. Steinberg personally told me this story. This happened in Shari Tzedek Hospital in Eretz Yisrael, that a Hasidic family came in and said they want to do PGD. Why do they want to do PGD? Because their children had an illness that's basically premature balding. But it's not premature balding when you're 40 and you don't have a chup anymore. Their children, their little 5, 6 years old, had loss of hair. A certain type of alopecia, a certain type of loss of hair in their little children. Now, what would you say halacha would say about something like that? That's not life-threatening. It's absolutely not going to diminish one potential for them to do mitzvahs. It's not going to diminish 1% their chance to live a long, healthy, happy life. It's a zero factor in terms of everything that we hold near and dear to us. So how do they paskin? They go every single case, Chari said, it goes to Beis Din, a committee of halachically knowledgeable rabbonim, and they pask in each case, can you do PGD or not PGD? So what would you think? Is this a legitimate case? So on first blush, everybody would say absolutely not. So the kids, okay, say your kids don't have a lot of hair. So they won't have a chub, right? Solves a lot of problems with tefillin, solves a lot of problems. But they wanted this bedavka for their boys, not even for their girls. And the Beis Din paskin, yes. I think it was asked to Rav Yashiv. And he paskin, yes, you could. And why was that? Because they already had 2 children that were born that had this problem. And in the Hasidic community, if you don't have longer payas, if you don't have long payas, the children are ostracized. The children have a great, difficult time socializing. And they were really undergoing painful childhood because they didn't have the longer payas. And Rav Yashiv paskin, in this situation, these children are suffering. This is a very significant trauma to them. A psychological trauma in halacha is just looked at the same exact way as a physiological trauma. If somebody were to break their arm, we wouldn't say, well, it's not bikuach nefashos. You're not allowed to set it. You're not allowed to take care of it. Oh, don't touch in God's way. So you'll have a broken arm the rest of your life. Or you can live a perfectly normal life. It'll be more difficult for you. Tough luck. Rachmana litzlan, we don't say that. You fix the broken arm. Even if there's no pikuach nefashos aspect to it. So Rav Yashiv paskin in this case also, you have a psychological trauma. It's no different than a broken arm. And he paskin, they're allowed to do PGD, that their boys shouldn't have over here this premature balding that would cause them not to have payas. And again, every one of these cases, there are many, many interesting scenarios. How significant does the genetic problem have to be? If the genetic problem is going to be something that's not life-threatening, it's just a little bit difficult, how difficult does it have to be? These are all shilas that need to be asked to in Eretz Yisrael, to the Beis Din. In America, you should ask a Rav if this comes up, because the doctors will do whatever you want. The doctor will be more than happy, unfortunately, to do an abortion if that's your choice. The doctor will be more than happy to select the gender, to select anything that you want beforehand, because they're not under halachic auspices. So again, this is the buyer has to be aware that these things need to ask a shiloh for. That leads into the next subject, which is critically important as well, and that is termination of pregnancy. What does halacha have to say about termination of pregnancy? So if you're in the United States, everybody just assumes that the far right, a Christian, evangelical far right, is 100% aligned with halacha, and it says that abortion is not allowed. So it's not 100% aligned, and that's a very important thing for people to realize. While it's closely aligned, halacha would be against some of the laws that are now being passed about not allowing an abortion once you have a fetal heartbeat. Once you have an ultrasound showing that there's a heart beating, so in certain states they've recently come out with laws saying that it's illegal to do an abortion. That's not a halachic opinion. Now, halacha absolutely doesn't allow you to do abortion. Let's make that clear. But halacha is not absolute and says, no, you can't do abortion. Christian theology, we're not here to give a shiur on Christian theology, but if you go into a Christian hospital, if you go into a Catholic hospital, and they're under their guidelines, which says that the child's life is more precious than the mother's life, and that you're not allowed to do an abortion even to save the mother's life, so that's not halachically correct. Rav Shechter Shlita says that for them it may be halachically correct, because they have, in some ways, a higher level of restriction. That's one of the Zion mitzvahs b'nei Noach, not to do an abortion. Whereas for us, it's not one of the Yoharig v'ayavor types of situations. And that's based upon what the isser of abortion is. But for non-Jewish people, it may be an Isser of Yehari Vayavar, and you're not allowed to kill one person to save another person. So they may technically be right for them, but they're not right for us. And a person should be aware, if he's going to give birth in a Catholic hospital, they should find out, what would the hospital do? The vast majority, I think, will still save the mother at the expense of the child, but you should be careful. There was a lawsuit, I think, out in Arizona, where it was a Christian hospital, Catholic hospital, and the head of the hospital was, I think, a nun, and they allowed a abortion. It was at the time of birth, they allowed the baby to be terminated at the expense of saving the mother's life, and this caused her, I think, to get fired and caused a lot of difficulties because that was against their doctrine. So a person should be aware, the hospital that they're going to give birth, they should know what the rules are. Again, I think most situations it's not a problem. But what would halacha have to say about that? So we know in halacha that a child who's inside a mommy, a baby inside a mommy, well, is extremely valuable, and we consider it life. We don't consider it equal life to a person who is alive, i.e. mommy. And halacha allows you, for medical reasons, to save the mother's life, to do an abortion up until the baby is born. How you define the baby being reborn, that's not for today's shiur, but basically if the baby starts to come out, so if the rove of the body or the rove of the head comes out, so then the baby is considered to be halachically born already at this point in time. Fine. That's clear in halacha. Every posek agrees to that. If the choice is the unborn baby, while still alive, and while there still is an isser to abort that child for no reason whatsoever, halachically, obviously, you're allowed to go and abort the child, even at very late term, even at time of birth, in order to save the mother's life. That's clear in halacha, no doubt. The question obviously becomes, what are legitimate halachic reasons other than the life of the mother in terms of abortion? And this is all dependent, what the posim say, a famous machlokas between the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg Zatzal, who was a posik at Shari Tzedek, who wrote the 22-volume Tzitz Eliezer, which much of it, not all of it, but a lot of it is devoted to medical halachic issues that were presented to him over all the years that he was the posik for Shari Tzedek Hospital. And on this side of the Atlantic, Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, Milonu Kirav Moshe, he was the Posek Hadar, and he and the Tzitz Eliezer had a major machlokas in terms of the understanding of how abortion works. What is the halachic reason? And if you actually look at it, there are many, many, many different opinions as to how abortion works. So I just want to give you a little agadita first on abortion. There's a very interesting, we're coming up to the parish of Shemos, right? This week is Vayechei, next week is Shemos, and we're going to learn about Hamayal Dos or Ivrios, and we're going to learn about Makas Bechoros. So you should know that Yocheved and Miriam, Shifra and Pua, so they were wonderful, wonderful, talented women. In fact, it says that they were called Shifra and Pua. So Shifra, one of the explanations is Shfoferes. This is not the well-known explanation. That they would intubate the children if they were having distress and they would save their lives. That's why she's called Shifra. She put a tube down them. So again, modern technology is not that much more advanced than what Chazal tell us happened in Mitzrayim with Shifra and Pua. In Makas Bechoros, we're entering Shemos almost, and we're going to learn about Yitzias Mitzrayim. So there's a medrash that says that in Makas Bechoros, that not only the live-born Bechoros died, but even a Bechor that was a fetus at that point, also the woman miscarried during Makas Bechoros. So there's certainly a tremendous amount of discussion about abortion, even if it's not so clear. There's certainly in the various halachic literature, agadic literature, there is discussion of abortion. But clearly, we don't allow abortion willy-nilly. So what circumstances do we allow abortion is dependent upon what is the halachic opinion of abortion. There actually is a difficult to understand Tosfos in Nida on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Beis, which tells us that actually abortion is not usur. And everybody says that that's a misprint. It should be that it's not an issur daraisa, but it is usur. And many poskim disagree as to what the issur is. But most poskim say that it's an issur daraisa. And it's a question, is it a category of ritzicha? If it's a category of ritzicha, of murder, so then you can't do it because it's a category of ritzicha. And that even if you have, other than for the life of the mother, because then we have the child's not yet born, but you can't do it for other reasons like genetic abnormalities. If you know, Rahman al-Islam, that a woman is carrying a Tay-Sachs baby, that baby will die very uncomfortably and painfully before the age of 2 or 3. And you know that. You do, today we do all sorts of genetic testing, or you can do all sorts of genetic testing when the mother is, early in the pregnancy. And the doctors will tell you, no, this is a situation. You have some sort of a chromosomal abnormality. You have a Down syndrome. You have various other types of chromosomal abnormalities. You have a child with Tay-Sachs, Rechmana Litzlan. You have a child with cystic fibrosis. They can do all sorts of testing. So the secular doctors will say, we recommend an abortion. So what would halacha say if the child, Nebuch, Rechmana Litzlan, has a going to be fatal disease? Halacha l'maisa. Parents today, Baruch Hashem, it never happens today, almost never happens today because of the wonderful genetic testing that Dar Yisharim, which you talked about last time, started. So you're not going to have too many of these situations. But Nebuch, a child is diagnosed as having, inside the mother, Tay-Sachs. And the doctors say the child's going to die, and this is unfortunately 100% correct, the child will die before the age of 2 or 3. It'll be a painful death. It'll be something that you certainly want to do. We recommend abortion. So if this Shiloh was posed to Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, he paskined on this Shiloh. The same thing would come up with a child with Down syndrome, which is not a fatal disease, but is a disease that obviously has its emotional toll and other issues for the parents that have such a child. And most of them, if not all of them, who have such a child will tell you they wouldn't change a thing. But I think if people are honest, there are very, very few people that would l'chatchila pick such a child. So if you don't have a choice, you don't have a choice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu handles it. But what happens if you do have a choice? So if this question was asked to Moshe Feinstein, for any of the levels of severity, from a Down's child, which is not a fatal disease, albeit their lifespan is unfortunately short because of some of the medical complications that they have, but today, Baruch Hashem, they can live to 60, 70 years old easily, maybe even longer. We don't have that experience. Or, Rahman al-Islam, they have a fatal disease like Tay-Sachs, so if Moshe Feinstein would paskin halacha l'maisa, he did paskin this, you're not allowed to do an abortion. It's not something that's putting the mother's life at risk. The mother will give a perfectly normal delivery. There's no risk for the mother. It's a regular delivery. She's not considered in pikuach nefashos. And Rav Moshe Paskin, you're not allowed to do an abortion because he says this is an abizrayu of ritzicha. This is a category of ritzicha. And you're not allowed to do ritzicha in this situation, even though the child's not alive. But you're not allowed to do it because it's a category of ritzicha. There's no, quote, benefit to the mother from doing this. That's how Rav Moshe Paskin. On the other hand, the Tzitz Eliezer says that this is an Issa Daraisa, but it's an Abizrayu, it's a subcategory of Chavola, of damage. You're not allowed to damage somebody else. I'm not allowed to walk up to you and punch you in the nose. If you don't think the Shia is so good, you're not allowed to come up to me and hit me in the stomach. Some of you are looking like, whoa, I didn't know that was an option. So you're not allowed to do that. You can't go and damage somebody else. You don't have the right to hit somebody else. You're not allowed to damage somebody else. So the highest form of damage is to go and cause a miscarriage on somebody. So you're not allowed to do that. But what happens if the person says, listen, I want you to damage me. A person dislocated his shoulder, and the doctors in the emergency room said it's going to hurt, but we're going to put your shoulder back in place. We're going to damage you, we're going to hurt you, but you'll be happy with it. And the guy says, yeah. The person needs to undergo surgery for a non-life-threatening situation. They say, listen, we're going to have to do all sorts of things to you that are uncomfortable, but you're going to be happy about it. And the guy says, yes, I don't mind if you do it to me. So then there's no issur of chavalah. And the Tzitz Eliezer said that in this situation where there's pain and suffering involved and the mother wishes to undergo the termination of the pregnancy, she has the halachic right. It certainly doesn't say that she's b'chuyavos to do so, but she has the halachic right to decide, I don't want this situation to continue, and she has the halachic right to allow a termination of pregnancy. And Moshe was not very happy with that shot, and he attacked it very strongly. The Tzitz Eliezer responded very strongly. And this is one of the major fundamental machlokas in the abortion debate. This Shiloh once came to Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman held, I think, the opinion of Rav Moshe that you wouldn't be allowed to do such an abortion in this situation. And a woman came to him and said, you know, I need you to paskin for me. And he said, why do you need me to paskin for you? Who says that I'm your rabbi? Go to this great tzaddik called the Tzitz Eliezer, and ask him to paskin for you. So while they themselves may not have paskin that way, there was an authoritative opinion. And before the Tzitz Eliezer, before Rav Shlomo Zalman heard this also, personally from Rabbi Steinberg, who heard this from Rav Shlomo Zalman, who was very closely in touch with Rav Shlomo Zalman, he learned literally by his feet. So he said that Rav Shlomo Zalman, before he ever paskined on an abortion, whether it was allowed or not, because if there is significant risk over here to the mother, so then under certain situations it would be allowed. So he would always insist on speaking with the mother. And he said when he got older, he no longer did this anymore because he didn't feel he had the compassion. He didn't feel he had the ability anymore to understand what she was going through. And he said somebody else has to answer these questions now. Because these are decisions that are berumo shalom. They're at the highest level. And that any posek that gets involved in these, I unfortunately was involved in such a shaila, horrible, horrible, horrible situation. Lo aleinu, shouldn't have such a thing, where a terrible, terrible congenital heart anomaly was identified in a frum couple, and they asked Rav Shach to Shlita what they should do in this situation, because it was a very, very, very complicated medical outcome that they would have. And I had the zechus to discuss the case with Rav Shach to Shlita, and the psak halach was, he felt that in this situation the Tzitz Eliezer was able to be relied upon, and that you could in fact abort the child because of the horrific complications that the child, the pain and suffering that the child would have to go through, with no guarantee that the child would even be able to survive. And he thought that if the family wanted to have the child, avada they could have the child. But if the family chose to have an abortion, halachically they would be allowed to. Hashem Yirachem, Hashem should save us from having such situations. So this is a terrible, terrible situation, but unfortunately it comes up every now and then. So in these types of situations, a competent rav has to be discussed with what to do, and in fact, you need to go and make sure that you know the medical circumstances. This came true to a large extent with Ebola a couple of years ago, when Ebola was a major, major concern. Baruch Hashem, I'm sorry, I said Ebola, that's also a major concern, but I meant to say Zika. When the Zika virus came out, so one of the major complications of being infected with Zika, either right around the time that you became pregnant or early in the pregnancy, was that you'd get these children that would be born with horrific neurological complications. Could even be fatal, but certainly it could lead to babies with this very, very, very severe brain damage. And the question was, in these situations, A, can you use birth control in that situation? That was a relatively easy shaila, that you could mat your birth control for a short period of time until they got over the acute infection. That certainly was halachically permitted, according to almost all the poskim, depending on what type of birth control that you use, that would also make an impact. But where the concern was, the child is now, the mother's pregnant, and the child, they do the sonography, they do the various tests, and it looks like the child, Rahman al-Islan, has very severe illness. So I had the discourse to discuss this with a number of great poskim. And the majority opinion, but certainly not 100%, was that they would mat you based upon the Tzitz Eliezer. So I discussed it with Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, Rav Shachter Shlita, Rav Willi Shlita, and they would mat you something like this in a situation where the doctors felt that there was horrific brain damage in the child. They wouldn't mat you just because you had an exposure, but where the serial sonograms or other evidence showed that Nebuch, the baby, who had a high likelihood of having Rachmana Litzlan, a horrific complication, and would be severely brain damaged, so then they would mat you. They, again, would never insist. Nobody ever insists that you must do an abortion in these situations. But they would mat you an abortion in this situation. And that leads to the next point. What about if the mother's life is at danger, but she chooses to continue the pregnancy? And this happens all the time in various heart conditions. Baruch Hashem, we don't see it as often today, but in a mother who has rheumatic valvular disease. So we recommend that they not get pregnant, that they have severe valvular disease, because it could be too much of a strain on their heart during the pregnancy. So Baruch Hashem, today we have much, much, much less in the population of young women that can get pregnant. There's very, very little rheumatic valvular disease because we understand the pathophysiology behind it. It's related to strep throats, and the preventative treatment of strep throats prevents the rheumatic heart disease complications. So the generations before me, so this was a very common shiloh. Today, Baruch Hashem, it's not. But there are other medical problems that make this a very common shiloh as well. And the most common one would be if a woman, Nebuch, is pregnant and is diagnosed with a horrific cancer. This is a major halacha l'maisha situation. If they abort the baby right now and give her chemotherapy, she will have a higher success rate. But you can't give the chemotherapy while she's pregnant. The chemotherapy will either cause the abortion or cause horrific fetal abnormalities. So the choice is, the mother, and I'm making up these numbers a little bit, but this is the type of shaila, If you undergo the cancer therapy right now, i.e. have a termination of pregnancy, you're in your third month of pregnancy, we'll terminate the pregnancy and give you chemotherapy right now, you'll have a 90% success rate that we can cure the cancer. On the other hand, if you allow the baby to go to term another 6 months without any chemotherapy, you'll have a 40% chance of successive therapy. Plus, it has spread and you may have complications of the disease. What does halacha say in that situation? Are you mechuyev to have an abortion? Not allowed to have an abortion? Or it's a fetus's choice? It's the mother's choice. And the answer is, it's the mother's choice. Halacha gives the mother the leeway in that situation to decide she's willing to put her life at risk and have potentially a bad outcome for herself. If she was going to die anyway, so then halacha wouldn't give her a choice. If she's going to die if they don't do the chemotherapy, right? If she has a 1 month life expectancy, she's in her second month of pregnancy, so then she can't be a knocker and say, oh, I want the baby to survive. The baby won't survive and she won't survive. We're not talking about situation. Through normal expectations medically, the child is expected to be born healthy and well. Child won't get cancer from the mother. Child will live a normal, healthy life, Yezus Hashem. But the mother's life is now compromised. The mother, instead of having, and I made up these numbers, a 90% success rate will only have a 40% success rate. So halacha says the mother has the right to make that choice. She is allowed to say, I want to have the termination. She's allowed to say, I don't want to have the termination of the pregnancy. She has the halachic right to make that choice. Halacha doesn't require her to. Halacha doesn't prevent her. She makes that choice. And whatever she decides, she's within halakhic parameters. Yes?
Does halakha address the father's
life? So the father obviously should have be involved in this, but it's the mother's life. It's the mother's life. If the father says, I don't really like my wife that much, and yeah, by all means, let's keep the baby, so then halakha would say, if the mother wants to have the termination, she has the right to have the termination. It's her life. You know, halakha recognizes that she's the one that's at risk. But obviously, hashkafically, and I would say emotionally, this is something the husband and the wife need to be on the same team. They need to be on the same, wavelength. You don't want the wife saying, you know, I want a termination. The husband saying, I don't. Or vice versa. More likely, vice versa. The husband say, no, I don't have an attachment yet to the baby. I have an attachment to you. I want you to be around for another 100 years. And the wife says, but I want the baby. So, obviously, very, very, very difficult situation, and certainly they should hopefully come to a conclusion together, but ultimately it's the wife's decision, it's her life, and she has the right to say, I wish to put myself in danger. Husband can't demand that his wife be put in danger, and she has the right to say, I do or I don't want to be in danger. Okay, I always like to end shortly at 10 o'clock, so this will conclude our part two of the beginning of life issues. We didn't really touch about once the children are born, but once the children are born, if they, Rahman al-Islam, have horrible medical problems, so then it's essentially end of life. This is the first year that I gave with end of life issues, so there's no difference between a 95-year-old who has end of life issues and a 95-hour-year-old who has, unfortunately, Rahman al-Islam, end of life decisions to be made because of major problems or complications. And the only difference is that, and sometimes there's no difference, the patient has the right to make the decision. A 95-hour baby can't make the decisions. Unfortunately, sometimes a 95-year-old person can't make the decisions either. And in that situation, halacha assumes that the parents have the best intention of the child, and halacha would defer to what the parents want in that situation. The child's not a bar das. Even if the child was 10 years old, the child wouldn't be halachically allowed to make those decisions. Obviously, the parents would consider whatever decisions they would be making in that situation based upon what they love and know the child best. But again, halacha doesn't give a 10-year-old child the halachic right to make certain decisions. This comes up in situations where a child's not a bar das. They come up, a child wants to donate a kidney to the mother. This famous Shiloh, child with Down syndrome, the mother unfortunately needed a kidney. The mother was the major caretaker of the child. Are you allowed to demand that the child give the kidney? The child's willing to do so. He's a 20-year-old kid. He understands a little bit, but he's not a bar das. The mother and the father, they say, yeah, if the mother dies or she's on dialysis, she can't take care of the child. So it's in the best interest of the child to do this. So the post can discuss, are you allowed to do this? Because the child's not a bar das. You don't have the right. The child's not mechuyev. He's not mechuyev in mitzvos. What gives you the right to take out somebody's kidney if they're not mechuyev in mitzvos? So the post in that situation did matter because it was in the best interest of the child. You're actually doing something for the benefit of the child.
But for that child to be a kidney donor to somebody else, halacha wouldn't allow that. Whereas halacha would allow a bar das to be a kidney donor for somebody that they don't know. Halacha wouldn't allow an incapacitated person to be a kidney donor. So we really didn't discuss beginning of life issues from the child being born, but those are very similar in a lot of ways to end of life issues. I thank you very much for coming. I'll be happy to take any questions afterwards. They don't show up well on the tape anyway, so we'll stop over here. Thank you. There will be a part three in beginning of life. If there's questions on it, I'll be happy to take it. The next time we're going to discuss, I think the date is February 5th. I think it's the first Sunday in February, and we'll discuss halachas of Shabbos, Yontif, and fasting as they relate to medical halachic issues. So thank you very, very much for coming. I wish you all a great day.